Blog Talk Radio.
If it is Sunday night, it must be Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Welcome in to the February 18th edition of Wrestling Night in America. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks joining you tonight. And we're going to talk all the big events coming up in professional wrestling. We're going to talk Elimination Chamber, which takes place next Sunday night under the WWE banner. And of course, each week, we are here live on PWTorchLivecast.com at 8 p.m. Eastern, unless there is a WWE pay-per-view, in which case we will go on the air right after that show ends. So next week, if you're looking for us, don't tune in at 8 Eastern. Tune in after the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. We'll be taking your calls and your reaction to that show. We'll also talk Monday Night Raw, WWE SmackDown, heading up to Fastlane, everything, of course, in WWE building up to WrestleMania, which is about 7 weeks away as we talk right now. We're also going to talk Impact, and we're going to talk Impact with a man who is joining me right now. He is PWTorch.com contributor and post-Impact livecast host Mike McMahon. Mike, good to have you along on Wrestling Night in America this week.
Thanks, Greg. I apologize for being about a minute late, and unfortunately it's as I have given out this number for the last almost year and a half or a little over a year, I, of course, called the wrong number when I went to call in. So apologies for being a little late, but glad to be here.
No, that's all right. I'm used to filling dead time with just talking. I'm a teacher, so I know what that's about. But, Mike, you cover Impact each week in written form on PWTorch.com. You and Andrew Socek do a great job in the post-Impact livecast, which for everybody listening out there, there's a livecast every day of the week. On Thursdays, Mike and Andrew Socek talk Impact on the show after Impact airs. So if you're an Impact Wrestling fan, be sure to check that out each and every week. Mike, it's another regime change in Impact Wrestling with Don Callis coming aboard. Scott D'Amore and Sanjay Dutt doing the creative heavy lifting for Impact Wrestling. I think we're about 3 weeks of television into the Don Callis era. This era has not started off in the same way many other eras in Impact Wrestling have, with bold and brash predictions, with sweeping changes in either booking or the aesthetics of the show. You know, if you're a fan, really the only thing you probably really noticed was the change from the six-sided ring to the four-sided ring. I mean, what's your take on the first couple weeks of the new regime within Impact Wrestling?
It's kind of funny. You know, I think this past week's episode was, I think, the best of the three. And we started to see, I think, some more noticeable changes there. Andrew and I both were talking on the last two Thursdays, or on the first two Thursdays, about how they didn't change a whole lot. And I think part of that is the fact that, you know, they're coming in, they're picking up these storylines, and they've got to wrap them up, they've got to tie a bow on some of these things, and it took a little bit, I think, to kind of get through, and you could definitely tell they were rushing through some of those storylines that they were trying to wrap up and just get done with. So I think part of it, the first couple of weeks, a lot of it was kind of dedicated to that, having to not wanting to come in and completely hit the reset button and just saying, hey, nothing else before this mattered. They were doing it justice. If you were one of the 250 to 300,000 people that were watching the show on any given week, the storylines you were watching, they wanted to give a conclusion to. So I thought they did a decent job of that, although you could tell it was sped up. At least they did it. At least it wasn't like, Vince Russo and WCW when everything was just nothing before this mattered. We're hitting the reset button and we're not acknowledging things that happened last week. So I thought that was the first couple of weeks, and I wasn't too high on either of those shows. I thought they were very middle of the road and didn't feel any different. Like you said, you know, they felt like the shows from Ottawa that they had been airing up to that point. This past week, though, this past Thursday, that's the one where I kind of felt like, okay, now Now they're doing some different things here. Some of the production was a little different. Obviously, the commentary is different because Sanjay Dutt's with Josh Matthews now and Jeremy Borash is away from the show. I thought that they had the main event of Austin Aries and Eli Drake for the world title, and they built to that, I thought, nicely throughout the show. They showed both guys arriving. They showed both guys backstage cutting a promo. They showed both guys warming up. I mean, the show was centered around that match, but really everything that they did on that Thursday show, they gave you more wrestling. They had an X Division match with Ishimori against Phantasma for that title. That was a really good match that went about 15 or 16 minutes. So I think you're starting to see some of the things that they're going to be doing, which is focused more in the ring, not longer matches in the sense that they're going to be 25 or 30 minutes, but you know, I think their title matches are going to be even on TV in that 14 to 15 minute range. That's kind of what we're seeing so far. And then I think they're going to it seems to me that they're trying to keep it more sports-like. That was the other thing that actually one of our callers, I hope I'm giving credit to the right person, I think it was Kenny in Tennessee, pointed out that he thought the show felt a lot like a WCW Saturday night before Nitro, you know, when that was WCW's primary show. And I think that's a pretty good comparison from what we've seen so far.
Just running through the results from Impact last week, Lashley defeated Sami Callihan by DQ. Eddie Edwards came out and aided Lashley. Rosemary defeated Hanaya. EC3 and a returning Tyrus over Matt Sydal and Johnny Impact. Brian Cage debuted and won a squash match. Taiji Ishimori retained the X Division title over El Hijo del Fantasma. And Aries retained the Impact Wrestling Championship over Eli Drake. This week, we've got EC3 versus Johnny Impact in a number one contender match. Alberto El Patron takes on Moose. OVE against Eddie Edwards and Bobby Lashley. Trevor Lee and Caleb Conley against LAX. And Petey Williams versus Matt Sydal for the Grand Championship. So what seems like a loaded show this week, Mike, as well. So Impact seems to be trying to put their best foot forward with a lot of these top matches that they're presenting next week.
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually did not look ahead to see what they had advertised for next week. So that's going to be two in a row where they're giving away some big matches. And this is also a company that doesn't have a lot of top-end main event guys. You know, they still have some of those guys on the show that we know are gone. EC3, obviously, we know is gone. He's still part of this taping. Lashley is a free agent. But he's still part of this taping and a central figure. So it's gonna be interesting to see what they do with that top of the roster, because they're going to go back to tape more television in April. They're going to have a pay-per-view in April. And there's two guys that have been central figures and in their main event that aren't going to be there. So I don't know. Maybe part of that is just they're trying to get the most they can out of EC3 and Lashley before they wrap them up at the end of the taping. I didn't look ahead into spoilers. I try to stay away from them, so we'll see. But that's going to be two loaded shows in a row, which is, I think, rare considering this is a company that doesn't really have a lot of top-end names to load those shows up with.
How devastating is the losses of EC3 and Lashley going to be for Impact Wrestling going forward? Now, you have to imagine they're going to bring some more guys in. Austin Aries is a recent addition. Brian Cage is a recent addition, and they can sort of fill in the gaps when guys like EC3 and Lashley leave. But EC3 and Lashley have been in some top storylines, Lashley more so lately than EC3. But these are guys who have carved out a role in Impact Wrestling as Impact guys. You know, they both came over from WWE, but they're not really seen now, I don't think, as WWE guys, and both are expected to go to WWE with EC3 already having shown up at NXT TakeOver. So, you know, how difficult is it to fill these spots?
That's the million-dollar question, I think. I think Lashley's the tougher one to replace. Just because he's been in the world title picture, I think, for a longer period of time than EC3 has been. I think people just view him, you know, he's got that legitimate fighter feel to him. He's kind of there on a scaled-down version, of course. He's been Impact's version of Bobby Lashley, and they haven't been afraid of Brock Lesnar, excuse me. And they haven't been afraid to pump that up, you know, to talk about his heavyweight fights in Bellator. I mean, they just ran a whole angle with it with American Top Team. So I think Lashley's the more difficult one to replace, just because he's the guy that I think feels the most unique in terms of it. of anybody on their roster, even right now. I think he's the most unique talent they have. EC3 had been scaled back for a while. You think back even to last summer, and he was involved. I think he was involved with James Storm at Slammiversary in that pay-per-view. And then for Bound for Glory, he was in that kind of messy Impact versus AAA six-man. And he wasn't really in the world title picture since probably last March or February, around this time last year. So for whatever reason, they had scaled him back, even going back a year ago. So he wasn't exactly a mid-card guy. I mean, he was definitely higher than that. But I don't know that he's going to be as big of a loss as Lashley is, just because Lashley has been, you know, when Bobby Lashley comes on the screen, especially when you look at him compared to other people on the show, he's a big deal. He's been the biggest deal in that company for over a year, you know, probably 2 years, really since Kurt Angle left. He feels like the guy who is the most different and unique when you see him on the screen. So I think he's the guy that's going to be the most difficult to replace. But I mean, you hinted at Brian Cage, who just made his debut last week. I thought they did a really good job with that. And Andrew and I were talking on the live cast this week. If you do it properly, you know, he could be a guy that by the end of the year has that unique, special feeling to him if you protect him enough and present him properly.
Switching gears to talk about the X Division for just a minute. You know, that's something that always gets lip service when a new regime comes on. Yes, we're gonna build up the X Division. We're gonna make it something more than it has been under previous authorities. You know, we see now it looks like Lee and Conley going into the tag division, at least for the time being. Do you sense any, you know, and I know you've been on conference calls with them as well, but do you sense any kind of taking the X Division a little more seriously, or reimagining the X Division from Don Callis and Scott D'Amore?
Not yet. Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah. Everyone always says that, but yeah, not yet. I mean, I think that they've done some good things. I've become a big fan of Ishimori. I think he's really good, and he can be a guy that can be a really big player in that division. But at the same time, you know, I don't know if they feel that he's going to be able to connect with the audience from a promo standpoint. You know, it feels very much the same that it's always felt until they prove. And this is not obviously Don Callis and Scott D'Amore's been there for about a year with Jeff Jarrett, but Don Callis is a couple of weeks into the job. But it's almost at a point with the X Division where it's like, everyone says they're going to use it differently. Everyone says they're going to feature it, but I'm at a point now where I got to see it, you know, because it seems like no matter who's in charge, it's the same stuff. You know, they've got a pay-per-view coming up. So let's see, the opening match is going to be an X Division match where they might throw 4, 5, 6 people in there and just tell them to go flip around and do a bunch of high spots. And that seems to be the formula. So I'm hoping that they break from that and they give those guys something to do that they can kind of sink their teeth into a little bit more. But I don't know how you feel about this. I'm also not sure how much the X Division can be a differentiator for them at this point when you consider, you know, just the type of matches that you get from Ring of Honor, and even WWE has 205 Live. You know, I'm not sure that the X Division is as much of a differentiating thing as it was in 2002 when they first opened the company.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, that was something that at the time when TNA started, it was something that they sort of built their brand around, is the X Division, the High Flyer, something that WWE didn't really have at the time. And now that WWE integrated, not only, as you mentioned, 205 Live, but they have guys on the main roster who are, you know, the Finn Balor types and the guys who can fly. They don't always do it, but they have the ability to do so. And really, WWE, more now than I think ever before, has been open to the smaller guys, the Balors, the AJ Styles, representing the brand as world champions. So,
yeah.
You know, I think maybe it means, the X Division maybe means less now than it has, because, you know, not only within WWE, but the independent scene and some of the more visible indie companies out there who are getting the streaming services up and running, so they're available to more people. It's just a lot more competition, not only for the talent, but, you know, the X Division to the, I don't want to say the average fan, but to the fan who's interested and wants to go out of their way to find that kind of action, they can do it beyond Impact Wrestling pretty handily. You know, New Japan, you know, AAA, a lot of the companies that that Impact Wrestling is in bed with offered some of these athletes and some of this action that is better than really what Impact Wrestling can offer at this point for the X Division.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, too, you know, it almost you run the risk of it kind of feeling second rate because of that. You know, do they feel like they're getting the second tier guys because WWE can get whoever they want because they have the most money, so they can go out and sign anybody they want for 205 Live? And I mean, I think you could even look at this last week's show as a prime example. The two guys fighting for the X Division title were a Pro Wrestling Noah guy and a AAA guy. You know, it wasn't even anybody that was kind of, I mean, they're in Impact. There's a talent sharing agreement, but it wasn't anybody that's branded as an Impact talent. It was two guys from the outside that were putting that match together. They've got some guys that could do it. You know, I think Desmond Xavier is a guy who is really good, who has just been woefully underused. They had the Super X Cup tournament last year. He wins it, and then he has essentially disappeared from television since. That was a really good tournament they put together, I thought. And then they had this kid win it, and he looked real good doing it. And now he's, you know, barely on television. So I don't know exactly what the strategy was there. Seems like a blown opportunity. And then they've got other guys. I mean, you talked about Trevor Lee. I know because of Bruce Mitchell, I checked out some of the stuff that he was doing in CWF Mid-Atlantic. And it's like, you know, I've watched a lot of that stuff online now. And you sit there and scratch your head and you're going, does anybody that employ this guy see the stuff that he's doing? And he doesn't have to be a comedy tag team with Caleb Conley. Like there's a lot more there with that guy. But for whatever reason, they seem hesitant to just let him go.
Well, we're going to take our first break right now. We'll be back with more of your calls, actually. We're going to go to them in just a minute. So stay tuned here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at PWPodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Let me give you a task. Pick out a wine you're going to love, but there's a catch. It has to be one you haven't had before. Where would you start? Introducing Wink. Spelled W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, shipped right to your door, and starting at just $13 a bottle. With online ordering, quick shipping, and personalized recommendations, Wink makes discovering wine you love easy. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink, W-I-N-C, wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. Answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask, or translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee, and how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink sends wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections. Wink isn't just a wine club, it's a wine company. Wink works directly with top winemakers and growers from around the world to make all of their own wine. Each month, there are new delicious wines, like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. No membership fees, skip any month, cancel any time. Shipping is covered, and if you don't like a bottle I send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/PWTorch. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/PWTorch for $20 off. trywink.com/PWTorch. Back with more Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I'm joined by PWTorch.com contributor Mike McMahon, and we're going to go to the phones for the first time this evening. We're going to bring on Frank, who is currently in the Dominican Republic, I believe. Frank, are you there?
What is going on, Greg and Mike? How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing well, Frank.
Yeah, pretty good.
Good to talk. You know, I'm going to have to put my wife on next time we call because I just listened to that commercial with Wink, and my wife and I love our wine. And the fact that you can get $20 off, she is going to absolutely fall in love with you guys now that you now that you mentioned that. I mean, it's that is just, forget it. As soon as I tell her that, She's going to be like, put me on the phone. I want to talk to Greg.
We're happy to help out when we can, Frank.
Awesome, awesome. You know, it's funny. I'm glad, Mike, I'm glad that you're on this week because, you know, I wanted to talk about Impact Wrestling a little bit because I watched a few weeks ago. I watched when Austin came back. You know, Austin Aries came back and he won the title. And I've been looking for an alternative to WWE for a while, and I was watching it. Well, let me be truthful. The last full episode I watched of Impact was January 4th, 2010, and you can figure out why I watched that episode. And it was very piecemeal after that, so I never really got into it. But I have to admit I enjoyed it when I watched a few weeks ago because it was just about wrestling. You know, I'm not sitting here and watching selfies and – you know, people hugging each other and stuff like that. It's just about wrestling. It's simple. How do you feel? I know you kind of talked about it in the opening segment, and I heard it, but, you know, with the new leadership, you know, with Don Callis and whatnot, you know, how do you feel about the future of the company? You know, are they going to be able to get talent there? Are they going to be able to get guys that, you know, people like myself and hardcore WWE fans are going to want to see, you know, just to have a viable alternative to WWE?
You know, I think a lot of it's going to come down to money. If Anthem Sports has the money to go out and sign some of the guys that they feel could move the needle like that, then great. You hear stories about them struggling a little bit financially, but I mean, Anthem Sports is also a fairly large company, Anthem Sports and Entertainment anyway. And you would think that if they put some funding behind it, there's an opportunity to do so. I'm still, you know, I want to see them succeed. Obviously, I tell this to people all the time when I get things on social media with like, hey, you were kind of negative in your report this week, or I'm sitting there going, hey guys, you know what? Like, Andrew and I, we watch the show for 2 hours every Thursday. Then we spend another roughly hour and a half talking about it. I would love for the show to be good. I don't want to invest 4 hours every Thursday on something I don't enjoy. So I would love the show to be good. But it's one of those things where it's like it's been so many times, just so many changes. I feel like you gotta kind of take a wait and see approach just to see where it actually goes. You know, they got to prove it to you at this point. But I would agree with you. You know, I think the first couple of weeks has been a good start. It was a little slow, but I thought things really picked up this past week.
Yeah, I actually, it's funny, I'm on an overnight now, and I tried to watch, and it's not on demand, and I didn't sign up for the streaming service or anything like that, but, you know, like, that was the thing I was trying to figure out. You know, why would I want to, like, in other words, you know, why would I want to watch Impact versus ROH? You know, ROH, I guess, and I'm asking you to educate me here, because I don't know too much about Impact versus, you know, ROH and stuff like that, but... You know, they believe they have a working relationship with New Japan. Am I correct in saying that? Like, they have, like, a talent exchange or something?
That would be ROH New Japan.
Okay. So that's what I'm saying. Like, in other words, what would get me to watch Impact, you know, versus ROH as kind of an alternative to WWE? You know, I know there's been a lot of changes over the years and stuff like that, but... You know, do you see them, you know, being able to become that viable alternative, you know, to what we've been watching for WWE for many years, you know?
Well, I'll jump in before Mike gives his answer, and I'll say, you know, for me, a lot of it's the ease of access because I don't get ROH's TV show here where I am in Florida, but obviously I get Pop TV, and so it's a lot easier for me to keep up with Impact each week than it is for me to seek out ROH somewhere. I'm a dinosaur. I still have cable, so I don't have all the streaming options and all that kind of stuff that you know that ROH may be available on. So it's a little tougher, and I have to dig a little deeper. And sometimes, you know, when you consume as much wrestling as I do through WWE and through Impact Wrestling and things like that, you don't always want to spend your spare time trying to search out more wrestling, you know? So certainly if ROH were on TV, I'd watch it every week, just like, you know, it was on schedule. But it's a lot easier for me to just DVR Impact and blow through it in an hour, a little more than an hour each week. And for me, that's how I look at it.
Yeah, I would agree. I agree with Greg.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with Greg. I'm not sure there's anything from a product standpoint right now that would make you need to watch or anything I would say, hey, you've got to watch Impact over Ring of Honor because of this, you know?
Right.
I would say that there's shows – I mean, the television shows I feel like are real similar in terms of just the way that they're produced. Impact show probably looks a little bit better because the production value is a little bit more, depending upon the building
right.
that ROH is running in. But I think right now anyway – ROH's roster, and because of this, their pay-per-views just blow Impact's out of the water.
ROH is in, exactly. Because I'm trying to figure out, you know, are they trying at this point now? Because you know, you mentioned earlier on that there's been so many changes, and there's been so many, you know, new starts and all of that stuff. You know, where are we now with this guy Callis and Scott D'Amore, I believe you said? You know, are they trying to be just an alternative? Are they trying to compete? You know, like kind of what's their mission statement at this point, you know?
I feel like they're trying to just build a foundation right now. I think they love to compete, but that's going to take a long time. I think right now they're just trying to stabilize it and then hope that they can put the company on a foundation to bring it forward at some point.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that we're 15 years into the company existing and we're talking about building a foundation. You know,
yeah.
And I think that's really sad, and I think it's telling about where this company is right now and how it's been handled over the last 15 years. You know, I was just reading, Brian Pillman book by Liam O'Rourke, Crazy Like a Fox, which is just a fantastic book. And I highly recommend any wrestling fan read that. And you know, Pillman's early years in WCW, it's kind of funny to read those chapters because it was every 6 months there was somebody else new in charge, and man, rotating bookers, rotating Turner presidents that were in charge of WCW, and you know, you kind of get that same feeling if a book were to be written about, you know, Abyss or something like that, somebody who's been in Impact Wrestling since the beginning. You kind of feel like the Impact chapters would rotate on the same axis, the same way. So sure, it's frustrating for the real diehard Impact Wrestling fans, and you know, I think wrestling fans and certainly people in the industry would like to see Impact Wrestling become a viable number two, number three. But, you know, I think the guys in charge have the right idea. I think they know that they're not going to do that by throwing money at the problem, and they're trying to kind of build their way up. But, you know, I don't know how that's going to work.
You know, it's funny. You said the buzzword, throw money at the problem, and that's basically, if you look back at WCW's years, it was Ted Turner throwing money. You know, how do we compete with WWE? You know, okay, let's run, you know, Nitro against Raw, and let's sign all their guys, and, you know, all of that stuff. Instead of just building the company in the best possible way you can, you know, there is only one WWE. There is only one Vince McMahon, and, you know, he's the guy that took WWF at the time and made it national. Well, not everybody's going to do that. So just, you know, I don't know, just make your product as good as it can be and then go from there instead of trying to, you know, be what WWE is, because there's only one WWE. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess I'll move on to my my next point as far as the WWE pay-per-view structure. You know, the WWE announcing this week that they're going to go down to one pay-per-view a month. I think we all can agree that this is a good move by the WWE.
Yes.
Yeah, same here.
I mean, not for nothing. I mean, last year was tough to get through, okay? There were a lot of snooze fests. I mean, and last year was about to, I think it was just about after WrestleMania is when I started getting into, you know, listening to your guys' podcasts and stuff like that. And how many times did you guys talk about, you know, okay, this was an okay pay-per-view. It was watchable. It was, you know, it was decent, but, you know, and it was just so much, you know, how much Jinder Mahal did we have to get through? You know, Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal main eventing, you know, Battleground or, you know, whatever it was, Backlash that they did last year.
Frank, let me tell you, as difficult as it was for you to get through, imagine having to get through it, not only get through it, but then have to talk for 2 hours about it afterward on the live cast, twice a month, and being up till, yeah, having to be up early the next day for work and having to stay up till 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning to talk about Jinder Mahal title matches. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love doing the live cast, love interacting with the callers, but there were some shows that were, you know, that you just said, can I go to bed instead of talking about this? But we soldiered on, we pulled through.
And you're a teacher, right? If I'm not mistaken, you're a middle school teacher. So you're up at, you know, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
Right?
And let me tell you, I need my sleep to deal with them.
I can understand. My sister-in-law used to be a teacher, so I could totally understand. I used to actually bid my trips around pay-per-views. If I knew that, you know, I had a pay-per-view, all right, well, I'm going to be up till about 11 o'clock, so I don't want to have to wake up until 7 o'clock the next day, so let me not have a trip that reports at, you know, 5 in the morning. This is not going to work. You know what I mean? So, but my ultimate, you know, to get to be serious about it, it's a good move by WWE, but do you guys see this as kind of maybe a crack in the roster split, because this is what happened before. You know, we did the roster split back in 2002, you know, and they did single branded pay-per-views, and they were all kind of watered down. And the first thing they did was go back to dual branded pay-per-views. Do you see this as kind of maybe a crack in the foundation of the roster split, or this is just maybe a correction at this time, and maybe the roster split will kind of, you know, pull through?
Well, I think that's a fair question to ask. We are actually overdue for a break, so we're going to answer that on the other side of the break. Frank and Mike will stay with us, and hopefully you will too. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Back here on Wrestling Night America, here on PWTorchLivecast.com, and we just had an ad for The Deep Dive with Rich Fan, which is another one of our live casts. That airs Saturday night, and I just want to say, if you haven't listened to last night's live cast, Rich does a nice job breaking down and reacting to Bruce Mitchell's column in the latest Torch newsletter about New Day and the racial stereotypes associated with that. So if you haven't listened to Rich Fan's deep dive from last night, please carve out some time this week to do so. We've got Frank on the line. Mike McMahon, PWTorch.com contributor, joins me as well. We've got some folks on hold, so we'll get to them as well during this show. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Frank's question before the break was about the announcement WWE made this week going away from the dual brand pay-per-views and making all pay-per-views after WrestleMania involving both brands, and whether or not that is a crack in the brand split. And like I said before the break, I think that's a fair question. And Frank used evidence that this was sort of something that WWE did in the initial brand split 15 years ago when they first started it, and that eventually led to the end of the brand split. You know, I don't know. It's really so early to say, and the announcement just came this week, so it's hard to read too much into it. I think going to having both brands on the same pay-per-view, I think is easier because it, you know, the writing staff and everybody has been trained to write for these 1 month cycles of pay-per-views, and when the cycle is longer than 1 month, it's harder to tell those stories and harder to culminate in bigger matches. And for some of the matches, it's harder to hold off until the pay-per-view. I mean, we're looking at the Elimination Chamber coming up next week, and that's 1 month from the Royal
right.
Rumble last month. And this Monday night on Raw, we've got all seven members of the men's Elimination Chamber match in gauntlet matches. It's like they're clearly out of ideas on how to hype up the Elimination Chamber show. And it's only a 1 month cycle. So yeah, go ahead, Frank.
Let me jump in with one footnote here. Let me jump in with one footnote, okay? You could tell that SmackDown is dying to be in the Elimination Chamber match because what's the main event? The main event's a Fatal 5-Way, all right? They're one short of a six-pack for an Elimination Chamber match. So you could tell that they're dying to be in the Elimination Chamber, and that probably would have been a better path to WrestleMania, you know, if you had AJ Styles defend the title in the chamber versus, you know, some Fatal 5-Way. At least there would have been some intrigue. You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Greg. I just wanted to add that footnote.
No, that's okay. To get to the heart of your question, I really don't think it's a problem with the brand split because the brand split is so much about TV. And this is just a switch on pay-per-view, which I think is necessary. And it cuts down on the number of pay-per-views. You're not having two pay-per-views a month. Some months, and I think that's necessary. They are increasing, it sounds like, to from 3 to 4 hour pay-per-views now, all of them, not just the special events. So that's another added hour to watch. But
are they really going to 4 hours?
You know, I believe so. I believe that was the announcement along with combining the brands. But I think Raw is really doing so well lately with their own brand, and so many guys are having the chance to shine. Elias, Braun Strowman, where, you know, you wonder if they would have the chance to break out the way they've done if everything was co-branded and there was no brand split. SmackDown is struggling. I think that anyone will admit that, but Raw seems to be the barometer for WWE, and Raw is real strong creatively right now, I think. So I don't think there's any plans really to end the brand split. And I should also add a footnote of my own. I'm a strong proponent of the idea of the brand split. So maybe I'm the wrong guy to ask. Mike, what's your take on the news that broke this week from WWE?
Totally agree with you. Love the brand split. I think you need it. I think it's allowed, like you said, guys like Elias and Braun Strowman and so many other guys to get an opportunity just by splitting up the rosters. There's so much more TV time to go around. 100% think the brand split needs to stay. At the same time, I get why they're combining the pay-per-views again. I don't have a big problem with it. I mean, I guess if you were to ask me my honest opinion, I would say, hey, I'd like them to keep them separate if they could. But the fact is they don't have enough, I think, main event talent on each roster right now in order to do it. They're kind of stuck. And that's why we had guys, I think, like Jinder Mahal main eventing pay-per-views for the SmackDown or for the WWE title all throughout last summer.
Yeah.
You know, it almost feels to me like it would have been a better strategy to go with the brand split route like they have, but keep it combined pay-per-views for a year or two. And then maybe a year or two down the road when you have all this extra TV time and you have all these other guys that have been had a lot of exposure through the brand split, now maybe your roster's built up enough to the point where you can start to have individual pay-per-views and you have enough top guys on each brand in order to support those. So I like the brand split. I think the better strategy would have been to just keep them combined pay-per-views all along for at least a couple of years. And then as more and more guys get over because of the more exposure they're going to get through the brand split, you have the opportunity to split off those pay-per-views and have enough top talent to support them.
I've been nodding my head for the last like 2 minutes because everything you said is just exactly what I was thinking, you know, because doing the brand split and then just going to separate pay-per-views initially was not a good idea because, you know, you didn't really have guys established. And like you said, you know, you had guys like Jinder Mahal main eventing, you know, 3 or 4 pay-per-views in a row. whereas now there's a little less pressure, and you can have, you know, basically the top guys from each side. Like, let's just say 1 month, you know, the Raw stories are strong. Okay, so we'll run with those, and then there's a couple of SmackDown stories that are running strong. We'll run with that. And then, okay, you know, Raw kind of had its, you know, kind of had its moment. You know, we'll run with the SmackDown stories. We'll feature, you know, AJ Styles more, you know, just as an example, you know, and the Raw stories kind of take, but at least you're still blending, you know, both guys on, you know, both, you know, sides of the talent pool on the pay-per-views. I will add, and that was actually one of my, I have a Facebook page, WWE Fans for Life, and one of my friend's concerns was, do you think a lot of guys are going to get left off, you know, by having the pay-per-views dual-branded, whereas, you know, now everybody kind of gets a chance to be on the pay-per-views. Do you see guys getting left off and maybe not getting as much of a chance, you know, with them going with the dual-branded pay-per-views?
You know, adding the extra hour is going to help, but I don't really see it as a big drop. I think what you're going to see is, you know, the days of a Jinder Mahal type title reign will probably be over. They're going to put the focus more on the top, real top guys on that brand. You know, you may not get a title match, a tag title match from that brand on every pay-per-view. You know, you may not get a cruiserweight title match from the Raw brand on that pay-per-view like you would normally on Raw brand pay-per-views. So, little things like that, but, you know, they're going to make sure that the top stars have something to do for those.
Yeah.
I almost would like to see them go into a situation where they explain, okay, each pay-per-view has 8 matches to it. Raw's getting 4 of them, SmackDown's getting 4 of them, and then, you know, you could almost do something on the shows where, you know, guys are competing for those spots on pay-per-view. You could even tell the story that, hey, when you're on pay-per-view, you're paid more for those matches, or however you want to pitch it on TV, and now all of a sudden guys are competing for spots on pay-per-view, which is going to probably be happening behind the scenes anyway.
Right.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how the split goes with Raw and SmackDown. Do they get an equal number of matches? Does Raw, because it has 3 hours of TV, does it get an extra match or two over SmackDown, which will, of course, fuel the fire of the fans who already believe that Raw is the A brand and SmackDown is the B brand. So it could go either way, I guess, on that one. Frank, we've got some other folks on hold that we'd like to get to, so we appreciate you calling in, and hope you call in again next week or tweet me with questions at Greg M. Parks.
Absolutely, Greg. Good talking to you again. Mike, good talking to you as well. You guys have a great night, all right?
Thanks, Frank. You do the same.
Thank you, too.
That was Frank. He drops off, and we will go to the 443 area code next. 443, you're on Wrestling Night America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Hello, 443.
Hello,
can you hear me?
How you doing, guys?
Doing great. What's your name?
Mark.
Mark?
Yeah, my name is Mark. I'm shocked because I never get through to you guys. So, yeah, this is me. Yes, my name.
Well,
Mark.
Here we are. Glad you're able to get through. Do you have a question or comment for Mike McMahon and I?
Yeah, I was wondering, with this dual brand that's going on, which I really don't care one way or the other, so maybe we just going to get the cream of the crop, but I'm from Baltimore, and we were supposed to get a June pay-per-view, but as I'm looking, you know, I've been looking today, it doesn't seem like we even have an event here. Like, I mean, I can understand, you know, since we just getting one pay-per-view a month, switching it to somewhere else, but it's like we're not even going to get any event at all. So it's like, you know, do you know anything about that, or, you know, any city, not even just necessarily mine?
Yeah, I'm looking at the WWE pay-per-view schedule for 2018, and there are some months – well, those are takeover shows. My bad. Yeah, it's going to one pay-per-view a month, so that's certainly going to cut down on you know, how many shows they're going to have to offer. And it looks like June's show, Money in the Bank, is in Chicago this year, which, oh boy, we'll get the rumor started then, I'm sure. Extreme Rules, July in Pittsburgh. And, yeah, it looks like Baltimore is not on the schedule for pay-per-views this year as of a day or so ago. And I don't know how tentative
the locations
are.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's okay. Go ahead.
No, I said I remember when they came here, I didn't go, but all my friends sent it to me, and I seen it. We were lined up for this pay-per-view. Like, it was set in stone. I'm not sure if it was supposed to be a Payback or Extreme Rules or something like that, but it was lined up as Baltimore getting this pay-per-view. And as soon as I heard about the dual pay-per-views over the weekend, I went and looked and made sure that we still was on, but we don't have it. And we don't even have that same event that's going to come here. So I haven't heard nothing on it, you know. Kind
of disappointing. That was probably the case when they released the 2018 pay-per-views. They probably had it scheduled for the single-brand pay-per-views. And then once they realized they're going to run dual-brand, they had to cut back on a lot of – well, not a lot, but probably a half dozen or more events. Apparently the one in Baltimore got cut. I'm curious to see. Maybe you'll get a Raw or a SmackDown TV taping at that time period to maybe make up for it.
I hope so. You know, I take it one way or another, you know. And, you know, that's really the only question I had. Just wanted to let you guys know I appreciate everybody's opinion across the PW Torch family, you know, Wade, you know, Rich Man, especially you. You know, I'm just a big fan, so... You know, next week, maybe if I have another question, I'll write it down or something like that and call you guys. But, you know, let the rest of the callers get through. And, you know, I appreciate the show. Good show. I like it.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling, Mark. Glad you were able to get through this week. And hope to talk to you again soon.
No problem.
So that was Mark from Baltimore. We're going to take another break and come back with more of your calls here on Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, I'm PW Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can call in to talk to PWTorch.com contributor Mike McMahon and myself. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Make sure if you want to talk to us, you press 1 on the dial pad. You can also reach me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. Should be a question there, and we'll get to it at some point in this evening. But right now, we're going to go back to the phones. We've got 814 standing by. 814, please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, good to talk to you again this evening. What's on your mind?
First question I have for you is, if Don Callis would decide to be manager in Impact Wrestling, who do you think would benefit most by having his managerial expertise led to them? I would think Brian Cage, but the TV makes me think it might be Matt Sydal, since he has a mystery guider, it appears.
Interesting question. I know that Don Callis has said he doesn't want to be an on-air authority figure or an on-air character, but Mike, I'll put you on the spot. If Don Callis is to return as a manager, what wrestler in Impact Wrestling do you think would benefit from having him as their mouthpiece?
That's a really good question. I agree with you. I don't know if we'll see him come back in that role. I think he's probably going to come back as a color commentator at some point. I had kind of heard that was the plan as part of the new announced team when it gets officially unveiled, that's the role he will probably be in. But if he were to come back as a manager, because he has had a history of in a lot of different companies of being a good mouthpiece for guys. I think Matt Sydal is a good pick. You know, it's hard to say. Eli Drake's a good talker on his own. He doesn't really need a mouthpiece, but It depends on, you know, if some of these guys, if they were to change somebody heel, you know, I think if they were to go with like an Eddie Edwards as a heel, he would need someone as a mouthpiece. I don't think he has the charisma of a heel. You know, I think he just comes across in the way he speaks more as a babyface. So maybe him, if you were to completely change his character, if you were to stick with just kind of the current heels, it's hard to say. I think you could do it though with maybe one of the AAA guys. If you were to, you know, Phantasma is a guy where they've kind of gone back and forth with as a heel and a babyface. He seems to be trending more babyface right now. But if you wanted to give him a strong run as a heel, I think he would fit good as a mouthpiece with a guy like that.
You know, I look at the roster. I look at, you know, guys like Lee and Conley. He doesn't really seem to fit in with those guys. You know, I actually like Ryan's idea of Brian Cage. I don't think that's a bad matchup as well. And Cage is early enough in his run where you can stick Callis with him and have it make sense. It's not, you know, this guy's been wrestling in Impact for a few years, and all of a sudden now you have to make the story of how they have a manager all of a sudden and that sort of thing. So, you know, I do like the idea of Cage with Callis. If we were to extrapolate out the idea of Callis being a manager.
My second question for you is, the answer can't be any wrestler that's had any MMA experience like Sonya Deville or Shayna Baszler, but who do you think the toughest female is in WWE if you were, say, to get into a fight with them?
Oh, wow. Another good question. The toughest, like, you know, the toughest female in WWE. Let me pull up the roster because I don't want to. And we're discounting anyone with MMA experience, you said?
Yeah, like, say, Ronda Rousey or Sonya Deville or Shayna Baszler.
Okay.
Would be the three that come to mind.
That does. So is NXT women also available? Are NXT women available too then?
It'd be anyone
okay.
on the roster or son.
Okay. I would my initial reaction is I would take Sarah Logan or Lacey Evans. Sarah Logan, she's from the backwoods. I think she may not have wrestled alligators like ZZ did, but you know, you gotta be tough to survive out there. And Lacey Evans, you know, just with her background and, you know, having to go through the Marine Corps training and stuff, she's probably tough as nails. So those are the two that come to me when I do a very quick glance at the WWE roster of women.
Yeah, I would – that's a really good question. I haven't really thought about this, but I would go – I might go with Natalya. You know, her dad was a pretty tough guy, so you got to figure maybe some of that's probably rubbed off at some point. So, and if worst comes to worst, you know, she's trained in the dungeon. So if somebody were to get someone were to ever shoot with her in the ring or something, I'm sure she could stretch a person if she needed to. So I'm going to go with her.
Yeah, and that's a good point as well.
And my last question for you is, who do you see?
Now, wait a minute, Ryan. Before you get to your last, you didn't tell us who you think the toughest woman in WWE would be. You're not going to get off the hook that easy. Okay.
I was probably get with Natalya since she might have been in the dungeon before, and maybe she knows some submission moves that no one else knows.
She knows how to gouge out an eye, maybe. That's key when you're trying to... Okay, Ryan, your third question?
Okay. Final question for tonight is, if WWE would decide to do the Women's Royal Rumble in January of 2019, who do you see being surprise entrants that weren't surprise entrants this year? Like, could you see maybe Ivory and Medusa being in it, or are they a little bit too old, or do you think it might be some Ring of Honor females that they might sign away, like Kelly Klein and Mandy Leon?
I would first look to NXT before I look to ROH. There may be some women in NXT, certainly Bianca Belair. By that point, I think she would have enough cachet in NXT to, you know, everybody who's seen her says she's going to be a big star. When that is, we don't know. So certainly I think that she could be by this time next year, a major player down in NXT that could be brought up. You know, looking at, down at the rest of NXT, Shayna Baszler maybe. As far as women from the past, you know, I don't think Gail Kim, she's retired. I don't think she would want to come in for a one-off like that. You know, we had Pori Wilson, maybe Stacey Keibler. I don't know what she's doing these days, but you know, she was never known for being a wrestler, but neither was Tori Wilson really. So you could think about somebody like her. You could think about, off the top of my head, I can't remember the other one. Mike, step in and help me a bit. Who do you think would be one or two or three women from the past that WWE could bring in? I mean, Victoria was another one that I was thinking of. I don't know that she's really
yeah, that was the first one that I thought
WWE
of.
Right
yeah.
now. But she, I mean, she's another one that comes to mind is someone who would be certainly in shape with, you know, she's done some indie shots too and things like that.
Yeah, she was the first one that came into my mind too. You know, there's some others, although I'm not sure if they would really be qualified as a big surprise. You know, I don't know what type of terms somebody like Melina is with the company right now. I could see maybe that. It's hard to say. I mean, there's really it's the problem. I think that there's a whole big group of people, a whole big group of women from, like, let's say maybe even earlier than that, maybe like 99 all the way through to a couple of years ago, which is an era of women competitors in the company that they're kind of trying to erase. You know, they're trying to get away from some of the stuff that the way they presented them before. So in some respects, I think it's hard to go back to some of those names just because I'm not sure that they would want to go back to some of those names. But, you know, there's definitely some options out there that I think people would be excited about and that they didn't go to this time. I think for a one-off, I think you might be able to convince Medusa to do something. I think that'd be kind of fun. And then other than that, the first two that came to mind were kind of Melina and Victoria.
Yeah, Christy Hemme. I know she just had, I think, just had kids. I think there's four of them that she just had. So, you know, she's one that, you know, she had a big enough role in WWE that she could come back. Gosh, there's another one I just had that I lost. I was thinking about, you know, the ones in Lucha Underground, Katrina and Ivelisse. You know, Ivelisse was just in developmental, so it wouldn't be so much of a return as a debut, and I don't even think she has necessarily a big enough name from Lucha Underground to make any kind of difference. Katrina was really just on NXT back when it was kind of shuttered to WWE.com, and although she's done a great job in Lucha Underground, she's another one where, again, I don't know if she had enough WWE exposure to really get any kind of major pop or anything like that, unless you're in, you know, unless they do it in another city that has a lot of the smart fans, quote unquote, who may watch Lucha Underground or something like that. So, you know, these are just names to kick around really at this point. It's so far off. You don't really know who's going to be available and things like that, but it's an interesting thought exercise. If nothing else, Ryan.
I was hoping for Eve Torres. And she was one of my favorites down there. She'll be having more kids or not at that.
Ah, yes.
Oh, that's a good
and
call,
she's,
too.
I mean, she's been at the Performance Center helping train and things like that. So she's obviously still in shape and would be able to do it and would be a big enough name, you know, I think she's a former Divas champion. So that would be a nice return, too.
Yeah, the other one that just came to the top of my head, too, is Layla.
Ah, she was the other one I was thinking about. I was thinking about Christy Hemme and Layla. That was the other one, yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that we didn't see her in this last one. I think there was some rumors kicking around that she may have been involved in the first Women's Royal Rumble. So I was almost kind of expecting to see her and didn't. So that's one that I think could be involved at some point, too.
All right, Ryan, thanks for some really interesting questions this week. Really appreciate the diversity in them, and hope you call back again soon.
Thanks for taking my call.
So Ryan drops off. Our phone lines are open. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. along with PWTorch.com contributor Mike McMahon. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. We do this each week, 8 p.m. Eastern. And when there's a pay-per-view, now in 2018, there will be fewer of them. But when there is a WWE pay-per-view, we will go on the air live, taking your phone calls about that pay-per-view as soon as the pay-per-view ends. So we will be back to talk Raw, SmackDown, all things WWE, when we return here on Wrestling Night in America.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
Back here on pwtorchlivecast.com, Wrestling Night in America for Sunday night, February 18th, 2018. Mike McMahon is here with us. And, Mike, I want to talk a little bit about Monday Night Raw and the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, which comes up on Sunday night, next Sunday. Big news from this past week's Raw was basically Braun Strowman playing the bass. I mean, that was all I remember from Raw this week. You know, Mike, a lot of people, I was following this show on Twitter as this was happening. A lot of people loved it. I mean, this was Braun Strowman that we've come to know and love. But does Braun getting involved in this comedy with Elias, does it take away some of the effectiveness of this killer character that he's established? You know, the guy who knocks over the backstage sitting onto Brock Lesnar and Kane. Does being involved in this comedy take away from his character, or does it kind of add to it in a way?
I don't like it. I think it takes away from it. I think there's a way for him to do comedy, though. It needs to be silent comedy. I think that's kind of the sweet spot. If you want to do anything with Braun Strowman, it can't be him, you know, singing a song with a giant bass or anything where he needs to say something, because he's not really a very verbal character. You know, he kind of speaks through actions in terms of the way they've built him as a character. So, you know, you could do something, whether it's a funny glance or just put him in a kind of a funny situation. I think you could do something that you can kind of do some comedy with him, and it's not going to hurt the character. I didn't like that segment in particular. I just thought it was too much comedy for a guy that, like you said, they've tried to build as a, or not tried to, they have built as a monster, and they've put him in situations where he's, you know, throwing Roman Reigns off of whatever it was, a loading dock while he's tied to a gurney. He's driving, you know, trucks into him. He had the truck driven into him while he was inside the back of a truck. That was the other way around. But, you know, they've put him in so many situations where they've viewed him as this giant killer monster, and have him out there playing the bass, especially opposite someone like Elias, who's not near the top of the card, I thought did him a disservice more than any good.
Well, here's the other side of that is, yes, he's been built up as a monster, but he's been built up as a monster in an almost comedic, over-the-top way. Like him lifting an ambulance and turning it over and, you know, the bringing down the backstage set onto someone and the "I'm not finished with you yet" catchphrase, which is almost comedic the way he delivers it. Like, yes, he's been built as a monster, but so much of the monstrosity that he's laid upon his opponents has been so over the top that it almost in itself has comedic value. So could you argue that this is sort of in line with his character? It's a little bit more broad than what we've seen him do, but could you argue that this is just more comedy from Braun Strowman?
I think maybe that's a good point. But I think that kind of comedy is kind of what I was saying. Like when I think it needs to be more nonverbal type comedy, that's the kind of the stuff that I think works better with a guy like that. Although I see the point. I mean, him lifting over an ambulance is kind of ridiculous. And some of the situations they put him in to kind of showcase that strength is just cartoonish and definitely funny. But that's almost the type of stuff that I would prefer Just because at some point, I mean, it seems like they're going to try to do something with him, and they already have done something with him and Brock Lesnar and him with other guys in the main event. And I feel like for him to be taken seriously as a legitimate threat to someone like Brock, you don't want him out there opposite someone like Elias playing the bass and singing the song. You know, I think it's completely different if it was The Rock who had come back for a night and he had his guitar in the ring again and he's singing a song, and then Braun comes out and does something opposite The Rock, because it's The Rock. You know, I think part of it is the fact that it's Elias, who's been a mid-card act, and you don't want to kind of define Braun Strowman in that same category.
This coming week on Raw, we have a gauntlet match involving the Elimination Chamber participants. We also have just announced today a six-woman tag match with Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Mickey James teaming up to take on Alexa Bliss, Sonya Deville, and Mandy Rose, even though it was just 2 weeks ago that Alexa Bliss saved Mickey James from a beatdown, and now they're on opposite sides of this team. Like, I know that in the women's chamber match, it's every woman for herself, but still, it's a bit of a gap there in the storytelling, I think. You know, like I kind of joked earlier in the show that putting these guys in gauntlet matches is sort of a white flag by WWE. That's basically, we don't know anything else to do to build this chamber match up, so let's put them all in a match. You know, and it's sort of the same thing with the women. You know, it's just kind of, it's that basic WWE booking of, instead of building an individual story for each one of these guys, let's just throw them all out there in the same match, whether it's a tag team match, whether it's a gauntlet match, whether it's, you know, a three sets of singles matches. It just feels like they just have no clue what else to do and just want this pay-per-view to come.
I totally agree. Yeah, no, if they went with eight instead of seven, you could have put it in stone. You know, that last Raw before the pay-per-view would have been an eight man. You know, that's how it would have worked. You know, that's how it tends to work. Yeah. So I agree with you. I think it's I don't know if lazy is the right word, but it is kind of just tapping out on that last show and that last build with, we're not quite sure what to do, so just throw them all together and we'll figure out a finish, and it'll lead us into the pay-per-view on Sunday.
I think lazy is the right word in this instance, Mike, actually. Elimination Chamber next Sunday has, of course, the Elimination Chamber match, John Cena, The Miz, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, Elias, and Finn Balor, all for the opportunity to face Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. I guess I'm getting ahead of myself, facing Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship at WrestleMania. I hope I didn't give anything away there that no one already knows. Spoiler alert, Roman's winning, folks. I don't know what to tell you. We also have an Elimination Chamber on Sunday. The women's first ever women's Elimination Chamber match, Alexa Bliss, Bayley, Sasha Banks, Sonya Deville, Mandy Rose, and Mickey James, all fighting for Alexa Bliss's women's championship. And we have Nia Jax versus Asuka. If Nia Jax beats Asuka, then Nia Jax is added to the women's title match at WrestleMania. So, you know, what's the intrigue level, Mike, for you of the women's chamber match this Sunday? We've seen the women doing all the things the men do now, Hell in a Cell, Royal Rumble over the last few years. Certainly a good sign from WWE that women are being given the same opportunities and the same types of matches that men are. What's your intrigue level for this women's chamber match?
I'm excited for it. I'll be honest with you. I do wish they kind of did it a little more slowly. You know, I think they could have gotten more out of it. They just had the first ever women's Royal Rumble. Would it have made sense to keep the Elimination Chamber match to next year and have that big first ever thing again that you can kind of build to? That, I think, would be my only criticism of it. It's not even really a big criticism. It's just I think they could have done that differently, and maybe it would have helped out from the standpoint of you get two big things to build to at different points in the calendar year, as opposed to two things within a couple of weeks, you know. But I'm excited to see it. I think they finally have the roster to do it. I think that was part of the reason why this hasn't happened earlier, is they just never really had the roster to put these types of matches together and trust that it was going to be up to the level where I think, you know, they would expect. So I think that's part of, you know, a big part of the reason why they're able to do this stuff now.
And I think WWE is just, I think they're sort of afraid on one hand that they're going to do something to get called out upon for not making, because they've made it a point to say that, hey, the women are on equal footing with the men. And that includes whatever matches the men have, the women have. And they've made that point, and they've hammered that point home so hard that if they didn't have the women's chamber match this year, then they would have a lot of fingers pointed at them saying, well, what about the women? You know, that sort of thing. So I think they probably felt they had to do it this year. They couldn't wait until next year because they've really set the table, and they've set the narrative that the women in WWE can do everything the men can, and for good reason. We saw that the women's Royal Rumble match was just as good as the men's, if not better, in some people's mm-hmm. opinion. So, yeah, it would have been probably, you know, to separate the Rumbles, because you're coming off the women's Royal Rumble, and to have it back-to-back with the first-ever women's chamber match, I think it kind of dilutes the specialness of the first one of both. But I just don't think it's something they could have held off on this year, just the way things are going in WWE. On the SmackDown side of things, this week on SmackDown, Charlotte, Becky, Naomi versus the Riot Squad, six-woman tag action, just like on Raw. And last week we had a scheduled match, Baron Corbin versus Dolph Ziggler, where the winner would get added to the title match at Fastlane, with Owens, Zayn, and AJ Styles. Well, Owens and Zayn thought they had the perfect plan and it would attack Corbin and Ziggler before the match. Thus, in their minds, no one else would be added to that title match. Of course, that didn't happen that way because of their heels. And instead, two singles matches took place where Baron Corbin beat Kevin Owens to earn his way into that title match, and Dolph Ziggler beat Sami Zayn to earn his way into that title match. So now the title match, WWE title at Fastlane, AJ Styles defending against Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Baron Corbin, and Dolph Ziggler. Mike, what do you make of the additions of Corbin and Ziggler to the match, especially based on how they've been booked lately?
It's a little confusing. The Dolph Ziggler thing, I think, is the most confusing. I don't understand why he walked away from the U.S. title, why he went away. That seems to just be he went away for a month and came back, and he's exactly the same and never gave, really, I think, an adequate explanation for why he left to begin with. So I thought that was really strange. Corbin, I think, it makes a little more sense, but still, it. I feel like they're forcing all these guys together, and that's really what I'm bothered by. I'd rather see them just figure out a way to keep it a little more simpler. I feel like it's just kind of one big mess of it really kind of, maybe almost similar to what we just talked about with Raw, where they're going into a pay-per-view and throwing a bunch of guys together. It almost kind of feels like, hey, we've got all these guys and they kind of have something going on, but not really. So we got to get to WrestleMania somehow. Let's just throw them all together and see what happens. I mean, that's kind of what it feels like.
And I was on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast this past week that dropped on Wednesday talking about SmackDown. You can find that on Podcast One. And we talked about SmackDown this week at length, and one of the things was Dolph Ziggler. And, of course, that's a character right now that is such a mess. He came back, cut his first promo on SmackDown, which, of course, if you remember the trajectory of Dolph Ziggler to this point, it's he won the U.S. title, dropped it in the middle of the ring and walked out, returned at the Royal Rumble with no fanfare. It was a surprise entrant, number 30. Lasted approximately a minute and a half before getting eliminated. Yeah. No one, you know, bothered to ask Shane or Daniel Bryan how this came about, how they managed to convince Ziggler to come back, why they convinced Ziggler to come back, given he walked out on them. And then, after all that, he was granted an opportunity to be in a WWE title match. And he comes back, and he has this backstage promo, and you're saying, okay, it'll be put together here. And he cuts the same promo he was cutting before he left, as if none of that ever happened. I don't think there's a character in WWE right now more of a creative mess than Dolph Ziggler. And let me tell you, sitting here in February 2018, that's a hard thing to do, because Dolph Ziggler in 2017 was a creative mess. And you're thinking, well, it can't get worse than this. Folks, it's gotten worse. If you're a Dolph Ziggler fan, I am sorry. I feel sorry for you, because this – it's nonsensical the way we've gotten from he dropped the U.S. title in the middle of the ring and walked out on the company to he's in a WWE title match at Fastlane.
It doesn't make any sense at all. You know, it almost felt like, you know, you want to talk about lazy. It almost felt like he needed a month off or something. And instead of coming up for a reason to give him a month off, they just said, well, just throw the title down and leave and then come back in a month and we'll just pick up where we left off. I mean, there was no effort put into giving it any type of explanation at all.
Wade Keller and a lot of the people at the Torch have been banging the table for years about systematic time off for guys. If this is the creative way around that WWE is how they're going to handle giving guys time off from a creative point of view, maybe it's not the best option, because this was bad. This was really bad. We're going to talk about more positive stuff after this. We're going to talk 205 Live, NXT, and some independent shows that happened this weekend. So stay tuned. More with Mike McMahon and myself here on PWTorchLivecast.com, Wrestling Night in America.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
We return to Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com with PWTorch.com contributor Mike McMahon. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Moving to NXT and 205 Live, Mike, this past week was a really strong episode of NXT television. Pete Dunne retained his UK title over Roderick Strong. Shayna Baszler beat Ember Moon by disqualification for the women's title, and Kairi Sane interfered. We had TM61 also winning a squash match. Next up, Johnny Gargano against Andrade Cien Almas next week for the NXT title, where Gargano has to leave NXT if he loses. So, you know, the Gargano-Almas story, I was a guy who argued that Gargano should have won at TakeOver. What do you think this means for Gargano? I mean, does he win it next week, or is he written out of NXT in going to the main roster, or does he come back in a mask and, you know, doesn't acknowledge that he's Johnny Gargano anymore? I mean, he's got that unfinished business with Tommaso Ciampa, so if he loses and leaves NXT and doesn't come back, you know, is that something they revisit on the main roster? A lot of questions here about Gargano's future.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think they could revisit it on the main roster if that's where they wanted to go with it. Part of me thinks, and I don't remember, I'll be honest with you, when these were taped, was there any indication that Triple H would be taking over 205 Live at that point or not? But I almost wonder, in the whole setup to this, is this set up to get Gargano out of NXT, and then does Ciampa come out of NXT as well, and is that feud revisited as a feud on 205 Live? Because both guys are... you know, Gargano certainly is. I'm not sure how much Ciampa weighs, if he's considered a cruiserweight or not. But I think that could be part of the strategy. You know, I don't see them doing that on Raw. You know, I think they got to try to build up that 205 Live roster a little bit. And with kind of where the Triple H has taken it over, I almost wonder, did he look at, here's two guys, or here's at least one guy in Gargano and Ciampa as well, if they wanted to go in this direction. Here's a built-in feud that an audience will know and recognize, and we can go and actually do something with it, kind of make it a centerpiece of 205 Live, give them something to talk about that isn't just the Cruiserweight Championship. That might be where they're going. I kind of feel like, though, for whatever reason, this is a way to get Gargano out of NXT and move him up to the main roster. I'm just not sure really where he fits in terms of Raw or SmackDown. I almost feel like he fits better into a situation on 205 Live to kind of bolster that roster a little bit, especially if they want to make the show feel more like what the Cruiserweight Classic felt like and less like what 205 Live has felt like under the leadership of Vince McMahon over the past year or so.
Ciampa, according to Wikipedia, which is always correct, weighs 201 pounds, by the way, so he would be under the 205 threshold for that.
He fits.
Yeah, you know, the first thing I thought of, too, was, well, 205 Live for Gargano. And then I'm like, man, Gargano would almost be better in the heavyweight division. Like, he's so good, and he's such an over babyface, a real organic babyface that is so missing on the main roster. It almost feels like it would be undervaluing him to put him in 205 Live. The other side of that argument is, if Triple H is taking over 205 Live and he really does want to make it more of a main roster NXT type deal, then Gargano would be his flag bearer for that. You know, yeah. Gargano would be the guy, the biggest star in 205 Live, and would be the guy that really, if there's anyone in WWE who has a chance to get eyes on 205 Live, it would be Gargano.
100%.
So It's tough for me. It's almost, you know, it's the big fish, small pond, or small fish, big pond argument, you know, which is better for Johnny Gargano. And, you know, with 205 Live, he's got a ceiling. As big of a star as he's going to be, and as much of a turnaround as he could provide for that show, there's a very heavy ceiling there. And certainly he would still be on Raw, you know, because 205 Live does, you know, Raw has the cruiserweights and things like that. So he would still be on Raw, but, you know, being pegged as a cruiserweight has its ceiling. So Gargano is a guy who I don't know should be saddled with that 205 Live, that cruiserweight stigma. You know what I mean?
No, I do. I almost wonder, though, like it's a situation where, like you said, he's become such an organic babyface and the audience is so behind him. If Triple H is trying to rebuild that 205 Live brand, does he look at Gargano as a guy that, even if just in the short term, he could do that with? And maybe he says going into it, look, I'm going to bring Johnny Gargano up to the main roster. I'm going to put him on 205 Live. I'm only going to keep him there for 6 months. You know, by SummerSlam, he's in a big match for me at SummerSlam as a member of either Raw or SmackDown. But maybe we could use him for the first 6 months just to get people taking the show seriously again, because I think that's really where it's fallen off. As you look at the 205 Live as a show, and you know, when they were centering the whole thing around Enzo Amore, I mean, just nobody was taking the brand seriously, I don't think. And they just looked like a minor league production of whatever the worst of Raw was on any particular week. So I think he's the guy that they could use in the short term to kind of make that brand feel important again and feel like it's something that fans need to pay attention to, without necessarily saying, okay, he's going to be the long-term fix here. I think he's just someone you can use to get for 205 Live to kind of get its reputation back, and then move him on to something else, and hopefully the brand and the show is established at that point that you don't need a guy like that. You can get away with some of the other guys that you kind of build up around him over the same time period.
And speaking of 205 Live, this past week we had Mark Andrews over Akira Tozawa and Drew Gulak over Tony Nese in the Cruiserweight title tournament. Next up this week, the final first-round matchups, including Jack Gallagher, Mustafa Ali, Arya Davari, and Buddy Murphy up from NXT. It'll be the final four entrants in the Cruiserweight tournament fighting this week. You know, with the Triple H takeover, we had Drake Maverick, the former Rockstar Spud, in TNA as the general manager of 205 Live. And he's gotten a lot of positive reviews, and I know that you watched him a lot when he was in Impact Wrestling. You know, what's your take on him as a performer and how well he's done so far on 205 Live?
I think he's done a good job. Yeah, no, I think this is a good role for him. I think they could definitely use him as a wrestler at some point, too. I thought he was really underrated as a wrestler in TNA. They kind of took him away from that role a while ago, back when he had kind of become Aaron Rex's lackey at one point. But you look back and you look at some of the matches he had with EC3 when they first broke them apart, and that's probably going back to 2015, maybe 2015. It was the Destination America year. I remember him and EC3 had some really solid matches right at the end of the Spike run. They had a match over in the UK that was really good, and I think it went into that summer as well. So he's a guy that I think they could do some things with just as a wrestler at some point. You know, I don't know if they're going to do it right away or if they're ever going to do it where they kind of have him just plugged into that GM role right away. But I wouldn't sleep on him as maybe contributing as a wrestler on that show at some point, because I think he was – I do think that he was underrated as a performer in the ring with TNA. He had some really good stuff, especially with EC3.
I'm not sure if some of the guys in this tournament will stick around post-tournament, but you've got guys like Roderick Strong. You've got guys like Buddy Murphy. Some of the other guys, Leo Rush was at one point rumored to be in the spot that Murphy's getting next week. You know, if these guys are utilized on 205 Live, is this cruiserweight division, is this show, can it be saved?
It'll be tough, but I think it can be. I think it can be. I think they've got the roster to do it. That's the big thing. You know, we were just talking about Impact to kick off the show, and it's like we're talking about two shows right now that are trying to be saved. But I think if you were to compare the two, 205 Live is just in such a better position, both in the sense that they haven't been hurt for nearly as long as Impact, and they've got a much better roster to try to do their rebuilding with. So I think it can be, especially because it's not a 3-hour show where you got to jam it with a bunch of guys. It's a 1-hour show with maybe one featured match on Raw, maybe two. So the fact that they can tone down what they show, I mean, they could build the show, I think, very similar to the way they've built NXT, only have it in a big arena because that's going to be wherever SmackDown tapes, obviously. It can kind of be another version of NXT just with more production behind it. I think that's probably the sweet spot for it. And also, of course, just a different looking roster and a show that features a different style than you'll see on any particular Raw or SmackDown.
I think my favorite part of Rockstar Spud as general manager of 205 Live thus far is his pictures that he's posted on Twitter that are eerily similar to Triple H pictures that he takes with NXT newcomers or NXT champions, only it's Rockstar Spud / Drake Maverick in the Triple H role. I really got a kick out of those. That was a good wink and a nod to those folks on Twitter, I think, who make that connection. But that's been my favorite part of Drake Maverick so far. We've got some independent shows that ran this weekend and some big ones coming up that I want to go over here before we sign off for the evening. We had last night, Saturday night, AAW Showdown. Michael Elgin was a surprise, unadvertised wrestler who appeared and lost to Myron Reed. That was very controversial given the situation that Elgin has found himself embroiled in now. So a lot of talk on Twitter about that and about AAW's decision to use Michael Elgin. We've got Trevor Lee over DJZ for the Heritage title at AAW, as well as Naito over Sammy Callahan. Evolve 100 was Saturday, and in fact, Evolve 101 is going on right now as we record this. But at Evolve 100, Zack Sabre Jr. over Austin Theory to retain the Evolve title, Matt Riddle over James Drake, and Keith Lee over AR Fox to retain the WWN title, were the key matches on that show. Wrestle Circus ran with Brian Cage over Tessa Blanchard in a title versus title, man versus woman match. PWG Neon Knights was Friday night. Chuck Taylor over Trent to retain the PWG title. Keith Lee over Matt Riddle and Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Flip Gordon in the top matches from that show. Coming up, AIW runs next Friday. Chikara runs on Saturday. MLW has their continuation of the Road to the Championship on March 8th in Orlando. Joey Janela versus Darby Allin, where fans will bring weapons. That was just announced this week on Twitter. Also, from the Wayback Machine, Colonel Robert Parker bringing back the Stud Stable to MLW. So if you remember from, you know, we talked about, Mike mentioned WCW Saturday Night earlier on the show. Fans of WCW Saturday Night will fondly recall Colonel Robert Parker and his Stud Stable. Well, that comes back to MLW on March 8th in Orlando. New Japan Wrestling has their Honor Rising show next Friday, February 23rd, Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, and Chase Owens against Marty Scurll, Adam Page, and Cody, and Goto versus the Beer City Bruiser of ROH for the Never Openweight title. Then on Saturday, a continuation of Honor Rising, Dalton Castle takes on Beretta for the ROH title, and Ibushi and Omega versus Scurll and Cody in the main event of that one. So Bullet Club explodes next weekend in those matches at Honor Rising. So we'll wrap up with that, and thank PWTorch.com contributor Mike McMahon for joining us this week. Mike, always glad to do audio with you. I know we did Moonlighting back in the day when I had that show on PWTorch.com for VIP members, and always good to talk to you about wrestling.
Thank you. Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It was a good time. I appreciate being able to come on and talk some non-impact things every once in a while. So this was fun.
Yeah. But speaking of impact, before you go, I'll let you plug all of your endeavors on the Torch right here.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can check out my my impact reports. They go up on Thursday night as the show airs at pwtorch.com. And then Andrew Socek and I are on the air at 10 p.m. Eastern, right after Impact goes off the air. We do a live cast. It's about the same length as this one, about 90 minutes. Usually breaking down that show, but kind of talking all the big news of the week as far as Impact Wrestling is concerned. So you can check us out on Thursdays at 10 p.m. right here on pwtorchlivecast.com as soon as Impact goes off the air on Pop TV in the United States.
And, of course, next week here on Wrestling Night in America, we will be on the air live right after the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. So tune in to us then. Thanks to everyone who called in, who listened, and thanks for joining us this week. Hope to talk to some of you again next week as well. And if you're considering going VIP for PWTorch.com, a lot of benefits there. We're going to tell you all about it right now.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is love.